Our next guest is a free soloing phenomenon. Please welcome Alex Moe. Here is what I don't understand. One little mistake, one little slip, and you fall and die.
Yeah. I mean, you seem to understand it well.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again on the main feed, Dom. No Survivor now or anytime in sight, frankly, but we are back today to do something that it has frankly been too long, as far as I am concerned, since the last time we've gotten to do this. Dom, we are back to talk about another documentary, and today we are going to be breaking down from 2018 Free Solo, which is available on Hulu. For the people, I'm sure, immediately asking themselves how they can go about watching this. So a lot to be setting up here and then a lot to be getting into. But I will begin by asking you, Dom, how you are doing.
Oh, I'm doing great. Very excited to be back here on the main feed, just talking about something. It has been far too long, and we will try to remedy that. We'll have more regular content during the longest of all off seasons, which it looks like we're going to be faced with now. So more on that as it develops. But also very excited to be back here just talking about a documentary. These are some of my favorite episodes to come in and do. Always a lot to sink our teeth into, and we try and choose them carefully. We're not scrapping for things to talk about when we dive in here, and Free Solo is one that we have had on the docket for quite some time, and we were always just about to do it but kept finding reasons to put it off, and that was fine by me in a sense, because it gave me excuses to keep rewatching it every single time I thought we were just about to come back to it again. But I really am jazzed to finally be in here talking about it, because it is a really fun documentary to watch. Also available on Disney Plus for those of you who, you know, bought in for Hamilton and want some further value for your investment there. Certainly possible. Disney Plus and Hulu are already linked. I don't know how that that web of tendrils of streaming services works in the modern
certainly
day,
but won't be long if it's not already happened.
Absolutely. But yeah, definitely worth checking this out. And I guess should go without saying, but we'll say it anyway here, if you have not seen this documentary yet, firstly I would advise not reading up too much on it before you go in, so you can go in there with a clear head. But then also, we will be talking about it as if you already know the outcome here. So tune out now, I suppose, if that's not what you're in the market for.
The one thing I would say quickly before you tune out now, although we will certainly be getting into the spoiler zone very soon, is I do think it would be worth just quick just flagging up roughly what this is about, so you don't have to do any Googling and you don't have to take our word for it. If this sounds like something that would interest you, hopefully this will be kind of a happy medium here. What this movie is about is a guy by the name of Alex Honnold, who is in his early 30s, I think, at the time that this is taking place. He is a rock climber, and he has made a habit out of climbing rocks with no ropes, which is extremely unconventional. This is called free soloing, hence the name of the movie. And apparently, and with good reason, I would say, less than 1% of people who are into rock climbing ever even go this far, even want to attempt this sort of thing. And I do want to say at the top of the show two things. First of all, if you are particularly averse to heights or even images of people that are not you in heights, this is perhaps a situation worth avoiding. I am myself someone who is not super stoked on heights as a general idea, and I've obviously been able to make it through and been fine, and I don't think it's anything too ridiculous on that front, but do be aware that at least for me, and Dom, you tell me if you disagree here, but for me, this was a movie that has made my stomach react like probably no other that I have ever seen. And number two is, as we will probably get into later on, because I do think, without saying too much, that just the mere existence of this endeavor and people wanting to film this endeavor in the first place is an interesting one, and one that poses some kind of ethical questions at the very least, if not outright concerns. And I want to at least say up front for my own peace of mind, I strongly disavow free soloing. And furthermore, I don't know, frankly, what people are so into rock climbing for in the first place. It seems like, you know, I don't know anything to speak of about rock climbing, but I would be heavily examining that risk-reward ratio, but we'll certainly get into more of that along the way, Dom. Sorry, go ahead.
Mandatory legal disclaimer, do not free solo.
Yes.
I guess if you try and it goes terribly wrong, you'll be dead, so you can't sue us. But families of listeners, patrons, whoever, who you know, feel they may have been led astray by our podcast here, this is us getting that other way right now. Do not free solo, please, just for our own peace of mind and also for your own well-being. Not a good idea. Even if you are Alex Honnold, and as they say in the movie, everyone who makes free soloing a big part of their life ends up dead. And I do not want any of you to be added to that list.
Exactly.
So we'll get that out of the way right now.
And the only other thing I wanted to flag up for anyone potentially still listening who is on the fence about watching this is this actually won the Best Documentary Oscar in the year 2018. So... which I didn't even realize until earlier today when I looked it up. I've been out of the loop on the Oscars for a little while, Dom. But that I thought was a potentially compelling selling point here for anyone still wondering which way to go on watching this. I would say it is very much worth your time, whether you do so before or after this podcast. As usual, I'm going to encourage people who care even slightly about spoilers to just watch it ahead of time. It's not like you've got that much going on. Just press pause and come back to this later. But anyway, Dom, I think with that out of the way, let's get into just the spoiler zone. And I do think with this particular movie, more so than most other things that we talk about, we probably will be hopping around out of chronological order a bit more so than usual. So with that kind of heads up out of the way, and now hopefully enough kind of preamble as we give people one extra moment here to quickly turn this podcast off if they really want to be unspoiled. But here we are now for real in the spoiler zone. Dom, just when we were prepping slightly before we came on air here, the pre-show meeting, and I greatly appreciate you showing up to the pre-show meeting this week.
You greatly appreciate.
Yes, yeah.
Thank you.
No, strong. I shouldn't diminish that kind of work. That's basically my bread and butter on this show.
More about how you appreciate me, please continue.
Yes, yeah. Well, I did appreciate something you brought up that I thought would make for an interesting kind of first post-spoiler zone topic of discussion. So get into what you thought was kind of an interesting fourth wall breaking thing. If you know what I'm referencing, I assume you know what I'm referencing.
Yeah, we will be climbing the fourth wall many times over the course of this episode, because I think this documentary in particular, sometimes it's explicitly thrust upon us when the cameras turn around and we see the documentarians themselves going through this moral quandary over whether what they're doing is responsible or not, and how they're going to feel if this all comes, or if he or all comes crashing down. But there are also just some meta questions, if you like, about how this documentary functions. And one of those is the mere existence of this documentary a spoiler in and of itself? Because if so much of this documentary's power comes from the suspense of that final climb, of the possibility, however remote, and many would say it's not a remote possibility, it is the foremost possibility, even if you are exactly Alex Honnold, that this could all come apart in the most terrible way, does that need to be on the table for this to really be exciting through that final stretch? I think most people who have seen the documentary, even knowing that Alex survives and succeeds in good health, would say, no, it doesn't. It's still, your heart is in the pit of your stomach for that entire home stretch. But I wonder if, you know, if you had someone who was completely insulated in a bubble and they had heard nothing about this movie, didn't know the name Alex Honnold at all, knew nothing about climbing, if they went into this completely blind, would they be primed for a better experience in that sense than someone who maybe they heard about Free Solo because they saw Alex on a morning news show and therefore knew how this was going to all end?
So that is exactly what happened to me. To be straightforward at the beginning of this, I did go in knowing that he's going to make it to the top. Not only going to live, but not going to back down, and is going to accomplish this mission. And I would still say that I have nothing to compare this against, because I didn't have a truly organic initial viewing here, but I at least don't feel like it took a ton away from the experience for me, knowing that it was going to work out for him. But what was your frame of reference watching this for the first time?
So I knew he was going to survive. I actually came to Free Solo having watched The Dawn Wall, another documentary about climbing, focusing on Tommy Caldwell, who we meet later in this documentary, and would definitely recommend adding that one to the list.
And that is, by the way, DawnWall. I'm sorry, but Dom was explaining that to me again in the pre-show meeting, and I wanted to clarify just in case any fellow Americans were unable to decipher that.
Yeah, Hong Jin-ho / Joe Biden addiction issues here on my end. So I appreciate you with the assist on that one. But that one is, it has a very different vibe from this documentary. And that's for several reasons, which I'm sure
hang
we'll,
on, sorry. It's honestly, it's like a Jenna Maroney movie. It's like the follow-up to The Rural Juror. Anyway, continue.
For several reasons, it's just a very different viewing experience. We'll come back to those over the course of this. And I think that is a natural comparison to make as well. But I came to this knowing that he does survive. And so with that in mind, I think you kind of put those concerns to one side, and instead you're focused on, I know he survives, but how? Like, how does he do this? How does he accomplish his feat, which seems so physically impossible? And in that sense, maybe it heightens your enjoyment of this to not be watching kind of on the edge of your seat with you're biting your nails off, hoping just that he lives. And with that out of the way, you're able to appreciate this for the truly incredible, once in a human generation accomplishment that it is.
So I don't dispute the basis for that. I do think, though, there is, at least as far as I'm concerned, and again, tell me if you disagree here, because I don't want to speak on your behalf, but for me, I guess it didn't really register the sheer physical element and the unlikelihood of making it to the top, because I believe that he has climbed El Cap repeatedly with ropes and gone through it successfully, and felt like, oh, I could have done that without any ropes, and that is what is allowing him to be willing to actually give
shot. That is part of the training process. It's hundreds of iterations of going through the usual climb with ropes, like marking out every inch of every part of this process, because otherwise, like, you're not just winging this. This isn't something which you just show up with your prodigious talent as Alex Honnold and you can just ace it on the spot. Like, you really have to put the work in, and the documentary does a good job of conveying that. It is clear from the outset that only Alex Honnold is both A, talented, and B, stupid enough at the same time to go through with this. And you see, Tommy Caldwell, one of the most accomplished climbers of his generation, albeit in different contexts, saying, I would never even think about doing this. The idea would never cross my mind. And one reason for that is that I have too much other stuff going on in my life. I am a more well-adjusted human being who the threat of death means more to me and more to other people than it does for Alex Honnold. And that's going to be a recurring theme in this documentary. But I think it is clear to the viewer that this is just the idea that you're seeing this movie in the first place is exceptional regardless of whether Alex lives or dies. Like, knowing that he lives, it's still just baffling that someone would be this foolhardy to go through with this in the first place.
Right, that's what I was getting at, is I think the critical distinction is not really the physical element, but the willingness to actually say, okay, I'm going to actually try this without ropes. But I would also add, I wouldn't be surprised if not that the movie did a bad job of conveying that a ton of work went into it, because I think that definitely comes across, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if one of Alex's takeaways was that the sheer preparation and, like, memorizing all the routes and all the tiny little sequences he had to get exactly right to make sure he did everything optimally took a lot more effort than necessarily came across. Like, they certainly made it clear that it took a ton of studying, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually far more pen and paper prep work than the film focused on. And that is understandable. You know, the pen and paper stuff is not nearly as thrilling as watching a dude hang off the side of a mountain. But I want to return.
I think it's also not just understandable, but inevitable. And we have done several of these documentary episodes where they go in depth on one kind of either competition that the whole thing is building towards, or some incredible athletic or mental achievement that the stars of the documentary are working towards. And you see the various steps in that process, where at first it seems like this impossibly daunting task, and then, you know, they put some of the prep work in and it starts to look more realistic, and then we get to you know, the night before, the day of, and suddenly it looks impossibly daunting again, and you wonder if they're really going to be able to do it. And then usually, most of the time, they conquer their fears and manage to get it done, and we all live happily ever after. But the nature of a documentary is that you're trying to compress years and years of mostly boring, nose-to-the-grindstone kind of effort into a montage, often, these very short clips, and necessarily something gets lost in translation there. So I don't fault them for like varnishing over the sheer amount of effort that it must have took for Alex to prepare for this. And actually, if you want to see some of that, if you want to get a better behind the scenes look, the Dawn Wall is actually a great contrast there as well, where Tommy Caldwell and his climbing partner Kevin Jorgensen, they are focusing on, I don't want to say like a less or more difficult challenge, because it is just a different challenge, but something of comparable difficulty within their own realm in climbing. And you see them just meticulously with these practice climbs over and over and over again. And that's actually a big focus of the documentary. And that's part of what gives it a somewhat different vibe, where it's not just this amazing raw character study and then also this incredible attempt at the end. A lot of it is more kind of mundane, here is how the sausage gets made kind of stuff.
So I want to definitely talk through this from Alex's perspective, and, you know, really put your Oxford philosophy degree to work here, Dom, shortly. But I don't want to skip over too quickly another really fascinating part of this whole thing to me, which is from the filmmaker's perspective. I was somewhat surprised to find out in seeing a bit of some interviews, not on the movie, that Alex has done, and just kind of researching this, that the motivation for him began by actually being approached by Jimmy Chin to throw around this concept of, like, what if you were to climb El Cap with no ropes. I just assumed it was something that Alex had decided upon himself, and the film crew had said, hey, if you're going to do it and we wouldn't get in the way, that would definitely be something that may be worth getting on camera. Even if the situation were one where Alex was initiating everything 100%, which it doesn't sound like it is, and I certainly don't mean to be accusing the filmmakers of being unethical at any point. I think they go to great lengths to address this issue themselves and discourage other people from being irresponsible along these lines. But I do think it is an interesting conversation to be had, Dom. Just, do we or do we not want to film something like this and potentially put unnecessary pressure on this guy?
So I think this dynamic would be different if the filmmakers were strangers to Alex, if this was more of a kind of a business relationship in that sense. As it happens, Jimmy Chin is one of the filmmakers. He and Alex go way back. Jimmy Chin, very accomplished climber in his own right. So he has a sense not only of what this means to Alex, but also of how difficult this challenge really is. And you see it said in the documentary that from the outside, if you know nothing about climbing, then you kind of take it for granted that this is an incredible achievement, something that no mere mortal could ever really hope to achieve. But the sheer scale of that doesn't really impress itself upon you. Whereas if you have been at the rock face yourself many times over the years, you know just like, you know that firstly you could not do this yourself, and that secondly you're not quite sure if Alex could do it either, and like you really understand the scale and depth of that challenge. And then also his wife, the other director, Elizabeth Chai Vassarelli, I want to say, is also herself a decorated filmmaker who's, you know, won several awards and so on. So the two of them know what they're getting themselves into in terms of their craft. But then through Jimmy and the relationship that the two of them have built up with Alex and Sani over the years, this is much more of a personal product to them. And so when you see Jimmy agonizing over this whole thing is even ethical to do in the first place, and you see him kind of trying to justify the project to himself in front of everybody else, that's not just because those are natural concerns that you would have when doing this kind of thing. It is because this has personal stakes for him. He is watching his friend potentially plummet to his death and recording that on camera for the world to see. So I think that dynamic really does inform a lot of those choices, and it's tough to weigh up those choices ourselves without taking that into account. I think in general, for Alex, he is very used to climbing under the spotlight. You know, he's done lots of recreations of his own previous famous climbs with cameras on him, like for that explicit purpose. He's used to being in the spotlight, maybe not talking to other people in the spotlight. That's always going to be a source of anxiety for him, but climbing in the spotlight, that's fine. That's his bread and butter. So I don't think that the mere act of being observed is going to cause him to falter in that really crucial moment. And that would be a very natural concern, I think. And then also, as you said, this is a symbiotic relationship between Alex and the producers here. They are both getting something out of this, and they're both working towards this shared goal. And so in that sense, I don't think that either one of them is really being like taken advantage of or going into this with a naive perspective. I think they both know what they're getting themselves into, or at least they both think they know what they're getting themselves into, because as is impressed upon us time and time again, the scale of this challenge, unless you are exactly Alex Honnold himself, is really impossible to fathom.
So I think if I were the filmmakers and this was being floated around and something Alex was considering seriously, and I got the sense that whether we filmed it or not is not going to really change his mind, which I think is pretty important at every step along the way, I would probably be of the opinion that if he's going to do this and we are not going to be any kind of problem for him, we can stay out of his line of sight or whatever, and we know how to do this safely because we're all super experienced rock climbers, I do think I would be interested in pursuing it. At the same time, I thought one of the most interesting quotes of the entire movie was one of the camera guys at the very end. Someone comments, "Oh man, he looks like he's having the best day of his life out there." And one of the camera guys says, "I'm not, I don't ever need to do this again." I do think that once in potentially a lifetime element to it is, first of all, what's really attractive to Alex. And second of all, what's potentially really attractive about filming this is, if he's going to do it and we're not going to get in his way, this is very conceivably the only time this is ever attempted in our entire lives.
Absolutely. And it is possible that if this isn't filmed in some way, Alex's claims to have done this would not be believed by some people, because it is truly such an unlikely thing for a human to ever be able to accomplish. So to be the people to have firm evidence of that on camera is worth something in itself. But that quote from the cameraman makes a lot of sense. You think about it from their perspective. They're not taking on board the same risk as Alex, in the sense of they're not, they wake up that morning and they don't know if they're going to go to sleep that night. But it is still, you know, they witness it happen, and you see some of them kind of remove themselves from the occasion. That they're filming remotely, but they're not there themselves because they don't want to actually bear witness to this if it does go horribly wrong. And then they have played a part in not encouraging it in some way, because Alex is hell-bent on doing this regardless, and you as a, you know, tertiary member of production, your concerns about this are not going to stop him. But I think there is a natural kind of guilt that comes from just being a part of that, being part of this process, which had such a high ceiling and such a low, low, low floor. And the other thing, too, I think, is what is the payoff for you, right? Where if you're a cameraman, you get to be a part of this production and it's all great, but you haven't yourself shattered the record of human accomplishment in this area. Alex has. He is the one person who has done that, but for everyone else, you are in this constant state of despair and anxiety, and then if he does it, it's more of a relief than anything else. And if you are heavily invested in climbing, then you remember where you were when you saw that moment for the rest of your life, probably. That is a career highlight for you. But it does feel like you are signing up for potentially a truly scarring experience, which doesn't have the same reward on the flip side, if that makes sense.
I think it may be understating it to say this is a career highlight for anyone who was filming this. I would imagine that watching a human being do this is going to stay in their memory for just about as long as they live as the single most remarkable thing they have ever seen in their entire lives, like a borderline out-of-body experience.
Yeah, you were there. This is the thing, right, that goes in the history books, and for the layperson out there, if they know one thing about climbing, if there's one feat that they've heard of, it is likely to be this one. This one enters the history books as that thing, and you get to tell them, you get to tell your grandkids and so on that you were there, you witnessed it, and it's maybe too much to say you played a small part in making it happen, but like, you were part of the framework. You had a front row seat to history being made, and that means different things to different people, but it does mean something to most of them.
So I think, Dom, that, you know, we've talked about a lot of documentaries over the years at this point, and one of the recurring themes has been people who are very near the top of their field, or if not, like, you know, way above the rest of their field, and what goes into all of that. But, you know, in the case of like the Barkley marathons or like Somme or whatever, we're watching people do these crazy 100-mile races or become master sommeliers when, yeah, it's completely, I mean, way, way, way beyond anything an average human would ever dream of. But there are at least other people who do marathons or 50-mile races or 100-mile races that just aren't through the craziest backwood mountains of Tennessee. And there are people who are wine connoisseurs. And yes, we are watching the people at the top of the game, but there are plenty of people staggered along the way who are 90, then 80, then 70, and so on, percent of that. In the case of Alex Honnold and Free Solo, this is something humans do not do.
Yes, and this particular task is so heavily polarized where there are no half measures here, right? You can't apply yourself with 60% of the talent or hard work that Alex brings to the table and expect this to, maybe you make a valiant go at it, but you fall just short. There is no falling just short here. There is falling way short and ending up in pieces at the bottom of a ravine somewhere, or there is success. Those are the two outcomes here. There's really nothing in between. That said, and you alluded to this earlier, there is another way that Alex could fail here and for us to still end up with Free Solo in some form, and that's Alex either he chickens out at the last second and has to come to terms with that, and maybe the documentary ends on a more reflective note with him looking towards the future, and now maybe in a year's time when he's had more time to train again, is he going to have finally attempt it, or by then will Sani have beat some sense into his head, or exactly what's going to happen? Or, you know, he tries and let's say there's some checkpoint on the route where he actually does get to stop and collect his thoughts and he decides he can't go any further. He can't risk it. And that would be a less invigorating outcome than what we actually get. But it would also be an interesting way to end the documentary and tie everything together. And you can frame everything else building towards that moment. So I think there are ways we could have got Free Solo without this exact thing happening. I'll pose it to you just to tie up that loose end, though. Let's say Alex does die here or suffers some like really serious injury. Is there still a Free Solo, or do we never even hear the prospect of it in the first place? This was this was completely scuppered. Everyone goes back to their respective hometowns, and we never breathe another word of this to a human ever again.
I would imagine it is much closer to that than it is to winning Best Picture, which is kind of a cop-out answer, but I would guess that there is not a huge market for people watching other people die, although who knows, Dom, in the year 2020, maybe that's exactly what the world is looking for. But I would imagine that there could easily have been a free solo where he does not end up going through with it, but still lives. But I would once again guess that that is also not in the Best Picture mix. I really do think this is not something humans do element is what really puts it over the top.
Mm-hmm. As a final question on this area of things, do you think it's, regardless of the outcome, whether it succeeds or fails, is it irresponsible of them to film this in the first place, in the sense of this is going to glamorize free soloing? Freeing solo? I'm not sure what the verb is going to be there. But I guess if he plummets to his death, then this is a good cautionary tale as to not try this at home. But if he succeeds and Alex becomes even more of this international sensation than he was already, is there a risk that you end up glamorizing this pursuit and the people out there who, because they are not exactly Alex Honnold, should not be trying this at home? Will they be tempted to? And do you have maybe some amount of blood on your hands if that goes badly for them?
So I think if you were to learn that some youngster out there watched Free Solo and then decided to go climb the local mountain and things did not go as planned, that would definitely be something that you might feel a bit responsible about. But I do actually think when it is something this far out there, I am actually less concerned about it than I would be under more easily imaginable circumstances for people. I feel like I would be far more nervous about filmmakers, frankly, than I would be about the rock climbing community suddenly deciding that free soloing is the next direction they want to be heading. I am a bit more uneasy about aspiring documentarians trying to make the next free solo.
I think that is a very astute diagnosis of the problem there, because I think people who know a lot about climbing mostly know better than to do this, with a few exceptions, and the film gives the brief obituaries of many of those exceptions, and I think does a good job of warning people off in that sense. And then the defense that I've heard from a few climbers just reading the comments on this, and this does seem plausible to me, is that climbing, especially extreme climbing of this sort, if you want to call it that, is self-regulating in the sense that if you go and watch some highlights reel of Evel Knievel on YouTube and you decide he's your new idol and hero and you want to try and emulate him, there's really not much stopping you from going out and buying a motorcycle and doing something incredibly stupid that endangers yourself and others. Whereas with rock climbing, okay, you show up to your local mountain range, you climb 10 feet, you fall on your ass, and hopefully you think better of it and don't try it again. There is a sheer physical limitation to what you can do with this if you are an amateur, and that will hopefully ward people off. But this may be a case where a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, as the saying goes, where if you have some talent or experience with rock climbing, just enough to think, hey, maybe I should give this a try, but not enough to know any better, you show up there and then you try it, and those talents and experience get you to a point where falling becomes dangerous, and then you fall because you are not Alex Honnold, and then, you know, the rest is history.
Right. I do think, and this is potentially a good transition into Alex's mentality, that amateur rock climbers are potentially at much greater risk than Alex's without ropes, when they have, you know, obviously they're at much greater risk. The syntax there was awful. I think amateur rock climbers with ropes are at much greater risk than Alex without ropes, and obviously at much greater risk than Alex is if they themselves don't have ropes either. I want to quickly wrap up on the filmmaker thing, just because I'm nervous that I may have come across as suggesting otherwise. Based on what I saw in the movie, it does seem like overall to me they were very actively aware of the ethical concerns here at every step along the way, and I do want to commend them for doing, as far as I can tell, and would judge, a very fine job along those lines, in case that was unclear. But let's move over to Alex himself.
Well,
because...
to embellish that, it's not just that they say this guy died as an experienced free soloer, because that's what happens even to the most experienced free soloers. They don't just show that quote of anyone who makes free soloing a big part of their life dies from it at some point. They also just paint Alex as kind of a loser. And this is a theme which I know we'll return to later. It's made very explicit that if you have other things going on, the risk-reward calculation is not there to give this a try, even if you are the best in the world, even if there's a good chance that it all goes fine and you have another feather in your cap to bring home with you. It just doesn't make any sense. And so it's almost kind of like negging the audience into not giving it a try. It's like, well, what does it say about you if you feel like you can afford a free solo, which maybe is the best way to shame people out of trying it.
Right. Well, let's get into why Alex might be compelled to do this, Dom, because I think many people listening and watching found themselves wondering something along the lines of risk versus reward here, which is he's risking his life to climb a mountain, yeah, do something that no one has done before, but how could that possibly be worth it? And I do think it's interesting that the movie spends the bulk of the time, frankly, getting into Alex himself and his views on all of these related issues and his personal life and his relationship with his parents and everything, because I do think that is an extremely relevant consideration here, much more so than I feel like, you know, getting 45 minutes of him climbing mountain surfaces would be compelling after a certain point. So what do you think about what is motivating Alex here? Because at least as far as I can tell, it seems like he almost views this by the end as a situation where maybe not this particular climb. Like, I think he could have lived with it if he had just never felt like he was in the right mood to do El Cap and he didn't want to be stupid about it. But free soloing in general, it feels to me like Alex would say a life without free soloing is not a life worth living, almost. And I would at least have a hard time understanding how he justifies it if he doesn't feel that way. What do you think goes into keeping him that interested in this?
Yeah, his mother kind of says that on his behalf over the course of the film. But there is part of him which I think says, I don't want to get to the age where I can't physically do this anymore and look back on these missed opportunities instead of giving it a try. And there is a sense in which he is like cosmically free rolling all of this in this very like warped but also coldly rational way, where if he falls to his death, he is not the one picking up the pieces in any sense of the word there, where Sani will be distraught, his family will have to come to terms with it. The climbing community is, I am sure it will spark a lot of discussion, but he will not be around to suffer the consequences of it. And so in that sense, if he succeeds, he gets to feed that part of his ego even further. He gets to be this god among men. And if he fails, well, he's not going to be around to feel bad about it. So in that sense, like, why not, right? And if you can get yourself into that mindset, then you can encourage yourself to do some truly dangerous things where, objectively, like in an actuarial sense, it doesn't make any sense. But in terms of the risk to you, I can see how you get into that mentality for sure.
I think it's also really interesting the way he talks about it as almost safe in certain different conversations that he has along the way. And to reiterate, I do buy that Alex going without ropes is probably safer on average than a lot of people who are going to go rock climbing tomorrow going rock climbing with ropes. But I agree with you. I think the critical piece is one, that he just feels so confident in his ability, having done it so many times before and probably come away from several of the, you know, many, many, many of them feeling like he didn't need ropes at any point. And two, just having that impulse that you flagged up, that he didn't want to wake up when he was 45 wondering if back in his younger days he could have free soloed El Cap, and at least now he knows. And I am certainly not trying to suggest that this will ever have nearly the same kind of consequence within my life that it has for Alex, but I do feel kind of, I personally related a lot to that quote. I feel not to the extent that I'm going to go out there and jeopardize my life anytime soon, but I am a big believer in not wanting to leave and trying to leave as little as possible on the table, I guess.
Yeah, there is also a darker side to that calculation too, which I luckily do not relate to as much anymore, which is that, like, for Alex, back when he dropped out of college, his family life was a complete mess. He had no friends, basically. He said that for his 1 year of college, he was a hermit, effectively. He just didn't relate to another human being at all. For him, when he had nothing else going on, it's like, well, I need to inject some kind of excitement into my life. This is a way to do it. And so we bring this up again of, if it fails, then okay, well, I'm not around, but then also my life wasn't that great anyway. And if it works, then maybe this brings my life to a new place and I get more recognition, and then one thing could lead to another, and so on. And so for Alex, you know, when you're much younger and you have, like, really nothing else going for you in your life, then that makes sense. But, you know, when you're plummeting off the rock face, when it all goes horribly wrong, is there a person that kind of flashes through your mind where you think, okay, I just squandered a future with them? Or is there, what is the regret that you have in that moment? If there is no regret, then why not, right? But this is where we get the brutally jarring conversations between Sani and Alex, where Sani thinks and expects that she should be that person. Like, she should be the reason why Alex should come to his senses and think that this is too risky. I have someone else that I need to bring into the equation now, and he just simply doesn't see it that way.
Yeah, those are some pretty jarring conversations that he and his then girlfriend, now wife, by the way, Sani, S-A-N-N-I. I'm gonna, Dom, give you a pass on the British pronunciation
I was steeling myself for this to be an issue, even before the whole Dawn War situation. But I'm glad we're able to come to an agreement there.
I'm totally willing to look the other way. You win. Actually, you know what? This is probably a situation where it's worth rolling the clip of that conversation that they have that you're describing, where she feels like her presence in his life should potentially be giving him some sort of reservation about this, and he feels otherwise. So let's take a quick listen to how that went.
I want to have this more like holistic approach that you have, where you're like, well, we're all going to die. Like, might as well do what we want to do while we're here, and it's okay when people die. But I feel like I want you to meet me halfway, and when you solo, to take me into the equation. And then I think you said there's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Would putting me into the equation actually ever change anything? Would you actually make decisions differently?
If I had some kind of obligation to maximize my lifespan, then, like, yeah, obviously I'd have to give up soloing.
Was me asking you, do you see that as an obligation now?
No.
Oh.
No. But I appreciate your concerns, and I you know, I respect that, but I in no way feel obligated, no.
To maximize lifetime.
No. I don't know. But I mean, like, you saying be safer, I'm kind of like, well, I mean, I can't. You know, I'm already doing my best. So I could just, like, not do certain things, but then you have, like, weird simmering resentment because the things that you love most in life have now been squashed. You know what I mean?
So this is just one of a few conversations along these lines with Sani along the way here, Dom. And, you know, I felt much worse for the filmmakers who seem to be in far more, you know, undergoing far more stress throughout this whole process than Alex himself necessarily seemed to be. Sonny was a whole different level beyond them as well. I would imagine that it is beyond ridiculous to be the loved one in this kind of situation. And I know that they say similar things about, like, in poker, which is a world I'm pretty familiar with, that it is often more difficult to be the wife of a professional poker player than it is to actually be a professional poker player. And Sonny here did a compelling job filling that, like, Farrah Galfond role, sweating the Veni Vidi challenge.
Absolutely. And this relationship is one of the focal points of the documentary, which is an interesting editorial choice in and of itself. And if you had to segment the documentary up into a few different chapters or topics, you have the action movie, if you like, of the climb itself towards the very end. But before that, you have, for the most part, this character study of Alex and his relationships or lack thereof. And it's that really drives most of the narrative in the early stages. You compare and contrast that to something like The Dawn War, where, not to spoil that for the people who have now added that to their watch list, but there is some wild stuff that goes on in that documentary, and also a lot of relationship drama and lots of stuff to keep you occupied. But because the central character there in Tommy is so much more grounded and seems so much more like a normal human being, to be frank, even someone who, like, he has this exceptional talent and all of these unparalleled experiences, but also he's a much better just kind of front man for that kind of thing. It has a very different vibe. It's not you know, this isn't about Tommy the same way that this is about Alex. For as much as Alex is a professional climber, you really don't learn that much about climbing over the course of Free Solo. You come away from the movie theater or, you know, from your couch where you watch it, knowing very little more about climbing than you did before. And that's another contrast with The Dawn War, not to keep name dropping that, where you actually get a lot of the background knowledge that you need to understand what's going on effectively. And so, you know, if you actually had an active disinterest in climbing, this might still be worth a watch just for the Alex and Sonny dynamic that permeates the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and thankfully so, as far as I'm concerned. We get one shot at the beginning of the movie that will make your stomach drop, and then they hold off on the real mountain climbing action and all these insane clips of him hanging over the side of the face of the rock that just make me, even knowing that it's going to work out just fine, nervous as hell.
And just on that very quickly, there is one shot which I haven't seen anyone else talk about, and maybe we're on about the same thing here, but there's a great moment where they show, like, B-roll footage of someone falling from a cliff face, and they bait you into thinking that they've actually just fallen to their death, and you're like, holy shit, they decided to actually air that in the documentary. And then at the last second, they, you know, the parachute opens and they break away and it's fine. But that is kind of priming you for what's going to come later, where your heart just, like, drops into the pit of your stomach for a second, and then immediately they bring it back up again.
I remember the guy in that clip is named Dean Potter. I remember that from the first time I watched it, because it never left my memory, thinking I was about to watch Dean Potter die, which I didn't see, but he is unfortunately someone who did not make it through that much Free Soloing, as far as I would imagine most people would be concerned. But yeah, I do think that it is interesting that so much of the movie focuses on Alex the person and what is kind of going into his mentality to want to do this in the first place. And one of the most interesting kind of things that I gleaned from his kind of post-game press, so to speak, is I actually listened to an interview he did on a podcast called Pardon My Take years ago, back when this first came out. Inventors of the Dunn Chain, by the way, over at Pardon My Take, although strongly disavow the rest of Barstool, as useless as that may be. But I thought it was fascinating that his reaction to the movie when asked about it was, oh yeah, I've seen it a bunch of times, and I actually really don't like that the first hour focuses so much on my girlfriend and my family and everything like that, but the mountain climbing parts are really cool. I thought it was really interesting that Alex didn't think that was either necessarily super important or certainly interesting to him when he watched this back.
It is interesting, but not wholly surprising. I think just the way he's wired, he doesn't feel too comfortable talking about that stuff, or especially watching himself talk about that stuff to a large audience, which I think most people would not feel comfortable with that. And then especially given the content of what he says, where I find myself wincing watching those conversations between him and Sani a lot of the time. And if that was the way I was comporting myself in my relationship in public for all to see, then I wouldn't really want to see that aired or talked much about either. But it is worth asking, before we get into some of the Sani specifics, why that relationship is such a focal point of the show here. And my theory, and I'm curious what you have to say about this, is that when you have a narrative which is so heavily focused on the antics of one person, then the personality of that figure has to carry a lot of weight in terms of buttressing the documentary and making it what it is. And so, using again Tommy Caldwell as an example here, when Tommy himself is fairly relatable in the sense that maybe you can't do the things that Tommy does, because who can really, but he seems like just a fairly normal, cool guy. Otherwise, you can maybe imagine yourself in his shoes, or he feels like a much more natural person to base this kind of story around. He is an oven-ready hero to slot into your narrative. For Alex, he's not really relatable in any sense of the word. Firstly, because he's doing this incredibly insane thing that only really he can do. And secondly, because on a personal level, like, you know you can't do what he does, but you also don't really want to be him either, just as a human being. It seems where, like, he's kind of a dick, and even when it seems like what he's doing is not malicious, and there are nods in the documentary to his mother alluding to his dad being on the spectrum and kind of implying that maybe he's the same way, even though he immediately refused that, there's a sense that even when he's not being actively malicious, he is not really concerned about how his words and actions affect the people around him. And so it's hard for Alex to be the person at the center of attention when it's just kind of tough to watch sometimes when he is. And so you need a more relatable figure shoehorned in there to act as that focal point. And sometimes that is Tommy Caldwell himself, you know, imported from the Dawn War to play that role in this documentary. But then sometimes it's Sani, who does seem, for better or for worse, much more just kind of normal in these terms than Alex is. And so that's where you get this polarizing divide, I think, at the heart of the documentary, where there is like this Skylar White syndrome going on with Sani, I think.
I was about to say exactly that. Right. I was going to call her reverse Skylar White.
Where, on the merits of the argument, yeah, like, obviously Sani is right about most of this stuff, but then because she is the person standing in the way of the action which is being sold to us as the premise of this documentary, then that naturally makes it somewhat easier to take Alex's side. But then also, I think there are many people out there who see themselves in Sani, who have been that person where they feel like they are giving so much in a relationship to this person who is just not returning the favor to any real degree. And so if you find, like, if you don't know anything about climbing, and also you find the figure of Alex hard to relate to, then you still have someone in here whose story you find easier to follow in Sani's. And maybe those people are kind of hate watching the rest of it, where, like, they're almost rooting for Sani to extricate herself from the situation. And they would maybe have a different view of the scenes later in the documentary where, yeah, for the first time, Alex tells Sani that he loves her, and, you know, after the earlier scene where he explains why he has such trouble using that word, you know, you have your view about all of that. But Sani plays, I think, a necessary role in expressing the obvious concerns that any partner in her position would have. And then Alex, as this, like, unique freak of nature, if you like, is obviously going to have his own response to that.
Right. I think Sani is absolutely, at least for a large percentage of people watching this saying what they're thinking and say, what are you doing, dude? Why just go buy a house? You've done plenty. You don't need to put yourself through this. And then
on the other end, you have the people who see this almost as like this thriller starring Alex Honnold, and they can't possibly understand why he puts up with Sandy. You know, she's just like this nagging voice in the background who, why is she trying to stop him from climbing when she knows that's what he wants to do? That's his ultimate goal. And so you put those people in a room with the Sandys of the world as they see themselves, and they're not really going to be able to find any common ground, I think. And that's what gives you something to talk about for the state of the documentary before we get to the actual ascent itself.
So let me ask you, to return to just Alex, the character, certainly not going to be too relatable for a lot of people, and not necessarily the type of person that comes immediately to mind when thinking about like compelling film subjects in the abstract, but under these exact kind of circumstances, I do wonder if there is something more compelling about an Alex type doing this than, like, to use the opposite extreme example, like a Will Kirby type just schmoozing his way to the top of the mountain. I feel like it would almost be less impressive if they were like a more conventionally successful kind of human.
Yeah, or to use the example from the Barkley Marathons documentary, like a Brent Mowney type who was just like crushing every conceivable facet of life, and this just feels like one more notch on that bedpost, so to speak. You know, for Alex, because he is such the opposite case, where this is the only thing that he seems remotely functional at, that then therefore that kind of increases the stakes in a way, where if he fails at this, then he has failed at everything, right? And seeing him struggle through that connection with Sani and trying to make that make sense for him and also for her gives you like another window into his personality. Whereas if it's, you know, someone who doesn't seem as fazed by that, then, you know, it's nice to see their partner giving them the unconditional support to ride this out or whatever, or them to sit down and have that very serious conversation that needs to be had about just what the stakes really are here. There is this inevitability to this, I think, where only someone in Alex's position could justify attempting this, and therefore you would never see a Tommy Caldwell or a Brett Mowney in that position, because like it just seems like an ultimate contradiction.
Yeah, I think Brett Mowney is the type of guy who, even though he's done whatever double-digit loops of the Barkley Marathon and would be very confident that he could make it through one more loop, he would never bet his life on that, just because fluke accidents happen all the time in that kind of terrain. And that, I think, is kind of the critical distinction there and what sets Alex apart. But to return to Sonny, which I also agree is one of the most compelling aspects of this entire thing, because she is, I think, far more relatable, and that's what I was getting at with the reverse Skyler White, is it seems like instead of kind of trying to talk our hero out of this thing that we're pushing for him to do, the way Skyler may have come across to certain Breaking Bad fans from time to time, I think Sonny is someone the audience probably relates to a lot more than they can with Alex, or at least a meaningful percentage of the audience. And I do wonder how much of the Alex and Sonny dynamic and his view on all of that goes into the way they met, which I think is worth noting, which is he was already doing free soloing and making a name for himself there, and he was, like, doing an event at a bookstore or something, and she, like, went to get a book signed or so, like, point is, she went in knowing exactly who this guy was, what his interests were, and what he wanted to keep doing, and I think in his mind, that makes it a lot easier to justify there, but What do you think about that element of the Sonny and Alex dynamic, especially when we hear him say somewhere along the way, when he finds out, as he's in the middle of training for this, that one of his friends that was also a big free soloer, Yuli, has died doing some kind of free soloing himself. And Alex says to Sonny about it, when Sonny is saying, oh, his wife must be so devastated, Alex says to Sonny, what do you think his wife was expecting?
Right, and it's a good question, which I think is at the heart of the frustration that many people watching have with Sonny, I think. It would be one thing if you met this guy and you fell for him, and then you learned he had this all-consuming and probably lethal passion that he was single-mindedly focused on, but you met him because he is Alex Honnold. You went to this Alex Honnold book signing and you gave him your number, and then one thing led to another, but you always knew what he was, and like any the attraction that you felt for him was because of this persona that he has, like who he is in the world. And so it seems like, yeah, what were you expecting to come back and say now, why do you feel this way? And it's a question that doesn't have a good answer. Like, I don't know what answer Alex could give, even if he were much more empathetic and much more fluent in his language, that could answer the question of, why do you feel the need to embrace death, to kind of chase death in this way? There's not a good answer to that question. There's no convincing someone. You either have that impulse or you don't. And if you don't, nothing the other person can say could ever possibly make it make sense to you.
It does feel a bit like meeting Evel Knievel at one of his big stunts and then being blown away that he keeps doing big stunts. But yeah, I think it just so much of this comes down to the sheer incompatibility between Alex's view of the risk and reward of this situation and every other human being on the planet's view of the risk and reward in this situation. And it's got to be,
which,
yeah,
is what kind of makes you worry that incompatibility, excuse me, is almost the point for her. Like, she sees it as her goal to change him, right? To tame his ways. And she gets to be with the Alex Honnold, but he's not the Alex Honnold in the most dangerous ways anymore.
So is she the one free soloing and he's the big obstacle, Dom? Is this all just a giant metaphor here?
Nothing is a metaphor, Colin. Nothing ever has been, nothing ever will be. But no, I think what makes this dynamic so interesting to unpack is that both of them have a somewhat valid perspective on this, even though she handles it much more artfully and gracefully than he does, I would argue. But those perspectives can never truly be compatible. And so I think Alex needs someone who is either genuinely aloof when it comes to his fate and his well-being and won't actually shed that many tears if he does plummet to his death, or who shares that rare but it does exist philosophy on life and death and wanting to chase that high that he does, and who will maybe be distraught if it ends badly for him but will understand what led him to that conclusion. Sonny can never be that person. To his credit, I don't think he's necessarily trying to change Sonny in that sense, but he's also not managing that situation with any delicacy or understanding whatsoever. And then from Sonny's side, as we said, she can never convince him or be convinced that his approach makes any sense whatsoever. And she clearly needs someone who is willing to give back what she's giving out, to give her that kind of emotional connection and reassurance and understanding. And that is a foundational part of any relationship, and it is so totally basic to want those things and to need those things, and it's completely fine that she's asking for it, but she should know she's never getting it from Alex. That's not who he is, and instead of trying to draw blood from a stone in that way, you know, there are so many other people out there who actively want to and can give you that, and it feels like this is just slamming her head against a cliff face.
It does seem like, at least based on what I have read about the last couple of years for Alex, like he has at least potentially toned it down and is doing a lot more charity work rather than climbing enormous mountains with no ropes. So it is at least possible that they have found a happy compromise now that he has completely transcended what anyone thought was humanly possible and is that kind of living legend and has that sense of satisfaction. And maybe they can, now that it's over, have kind of the best of both worlds.
Is it over, though? That's the thing.
That's a good question.
Has Alex reached that threshold now where she means enough to him, or potentially if kids come into the picture in a few years, will that be the point where he decides this risk simply isn't worth it? And yeah, maybe I'm going to try some super ambitious climbs, but those will be, you know, with a harness on me and so on and so forth. I'm not going to be taunting death and daring him to come and take me in quite the same way anymore. There is such a possibility that the triumphal note, to the extent that it is, that this documentary ends on, is going to age so, so badly if we get to, March 2022, Alex Honnold dies in terrible free soloing accident. Like, at that point, he is not around to reap the benefits of his own mythology anymore, right? Like, he can't revel in being the Alex Honnold, being the idol to so many climbers out there, being on the cover of so many magazines, because he is dead. And that is the other side of this coin, is yes, you don't suffer the consequences when you are dead, but you also don't get to reap the rewards when you are dead. And so I don't know if that's a wash in whatever cosmic calculator Alex is using, but
I think that's kind of why he views doing this as a free roll, is if it goes wrong, I'm dead and who cares?
Yeah.
And if it goes right, then I get to spend the rest of my life being the only person ever to free solo El Cap. And I don't think it is about wanting to be this living legend. I think it's about just wanting to push himself. To go back to Yuli, who tragically passed as Alex was in prep for all of this, and to also go back to, I feel like maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but it did come across to me a few times, like he was trying to suggest that this was a lot safer than one might necessarily imagine. When he was describing Yuli, he talked about Yuli being like, Yuli would always want to go off and see if we could push our luck and make these low percentage attempts at things people had never really done before, whereas Alex is constantly making sure everything is exactly right. And I do think that is potentially very uncommon amongst the very small group of people who do free solo. Like, I may have been just heavily influenced by the edit here, Dom, but it seemed to me like, at least the way it came across, most people who made a habit out of free soloing were just hardcore adrenaline junkies, whereas at least the sense I get from Alex, and maybe I would feel this way about them too if they had entire documentaries, but certainly the sense I get from Alex is, he views climbing as a way of challenging himself both physically and mentally, and it happens to be at these death-defying heights, but that's almost unrelated.
Yeah, I think it's the lack of overt emotion that really confuses people about Alex, where even when he is successful, he reaches the peak of El Cap, he is king of the world, and all he can muster is, oh, I'm so delighted. Like, he's not whooping and yelling. I guess it's hard to, like, cartwheel around at the top of a cliff, although if anyone could, probably Alex. But there's no extreme emotion to match the extremity of what he's just accomplished. And likewise, I think part of Sandy's frustration with him is not just that he seems blind to her concerns. It's that he doesn't seem to have any concern for himself. Like, if he was really seemed to be scared of this, then she could maybe have more sympathy for it. But instead it's like, yeah, okay, I might die. That's whatever. And the fact that he is so blasé about it makes her even more upset with him.
So, sorry, it's been... we talked about something along these lines at the beginning of the podcast, and I don't remember if I flagged this element up yet or not, but if I didn't, I will do so now. And sorry if I'm repeating myself, but... when asked if they would have kept making the movie if he had ended up dying, his reaction was essentially, I don't care, I'm dead, do whatever you want.
Right, and he says that with Sani, like, mere feet away, who's having to process all of this, and there is a sense in which your death is not for you, it's for other people, right? Like, why do we hold funerals? Well, it's not for the person who's dead, because they're about to be lowered into the ground, and what do they care? It's so that the people who are survivors of that death, if you like, get some closure, get to process it in their own way. And likewise, you know, you could argue there is something of an obligation where, okay, if Alex dies, yeah, he doesn't care, but if you have lived your life in such a way where other people care about you, that is something which you can't just instantly abdicate any responsibility for. Like, you do have to operate with that in mind. Like, for example, right, Alex has earned a decent amount of money over his years. He compares himself to a kind of middle-ranking dentist. And so, like, what does he think happens the moment he dies? Does that money evaporate? Or in the will, which I hope he's been responsible enough to draw up, has he left that to Sani? Has he left that to his charitable causes? Or is he just lighting that all on fire, right? Because if truly you think death is the end of your participation in society, then why not just light that money on fire, delete it from your bank account altogether? If you are bequeathing it to specific people, it suggests you do have an interest in the future, even after you've gone. And if that is true of your basic material goods, it should also be true of the emotional legacy that you leave behind as well.
Right. I do know Alex, in these last couple of years, has been working a lot more, and he started this in 2012, so long before Free Solo was even an idea. I guess he was a successful and well-known climber long before that. He has a charity called the Honnold Foundation, the Honnold Foundation, yes. It is a nonprofit for solar energy that awards grants to, quote, bold and ethical organizations driving innovation in the solar industry as an environmentally friendly solution to global energy poverty, end quote. Which I first of all want to say I think is an extremely worthwhile and noble endeavor, and I would imagine that is where a lot of his finances would be directed beyond his family, in the event that anything were to happen. And I would encourage, incidentally, people to go check that out who have an interest in that sort of thing. But I do think it's nowhere near a case, with or without a foundation, of just outright apathy about life. Like, it is, I think, worth noting that Alex is someone who, despite burning a ton of calories every day, which may de-incentivize, I think, he became either vegetarian or vegan because of the impact that factory farming or whatever has on the environment. Like, I think he is, based on the evidence that I've seen, a deeply principled guy who cares a lot more about the greater good than the average person.
You could look at the stuff that Alex has done with the foundation and with his, you know, outreach efforts and so on, and say that is the measure of his impact on the world. And graded on that metric, then yeah, he's a much more ethically sound human being than, you know, 99% of people could ever hope to be. At the same time, I do think there's some truth to that. At the same time, you do also, I think, have different standards for the people who are in your closest orbit in your life. And so, yeah, if he treats Sani terribly, but hundreds of thousands of kids out there benefit from his foundation, I don't think you can, like, assign the same weight to, you know, Sani and one out of the 100,000, right? You see where I'm going with this? Like, there is a additional and different responsibility that you have to the people who are closest to you and that you're closest to that I think does transcend that. And if Alex is doing all of these charitable goods, and not saying that he's like an actively cruel person or anything, but let's say he were towards Sani, then that would still be a severe mark against his character that no amount of I've raised X dollars for Y kids could really hope to counteract.
If you think about it, what percentage of an influx do you think the Honnold Foundation has had as a result of Free Solo and Dom, wouldn't it be unethical not to be climbing mountains with no ropes?
Sure, why not?
I also do want to state for the official record that 50% of this podcast has, too, decided to be vegetarian or vegan for ethical reasons. So congratulations to us. Job well done by both of us there.
And that means if I want to go and kick puppies, that's totally okay now. I'm just not leading them. And that's
I have to say, on air, sorry to date this podcast, but congratulations are indeed in order. I believe this is the first episode we've done now that you are a proud cat owner.
Yes, thank you. My cat, as Alex says of Sani, is he's cute, he's small, he livens the place up a bit, and he is absolutely and totally perfect, which is more high praise than he's willing to give her. So we'll just leave that one right there. There are reasons why Alex is the way he is that go beyond nature. There is a nurture component to this too, and this is one of the more troubling scenes in the whole documentary to me is when he's talking about how, you know, he wasn't hugged until he was 23, had to like learn that from first principles for himself, that the L word, love, wasn't used in his household. Basically his mother, it turns out when you do some digging, was a highly strange individual who only spoke French in their household, apparently, because she wanted the kids to be bilingual, but like their dad didn't really speak French, and so there was this just fundamental inability to communicate at the dinner table. And
she's trashing their dad constantly. I thought it was so funny that he said, soon as they got divorced, they were both so much happier.
She said, oh, nobody had an emotional bond with Charlie. You were married to him. How did this lack of a bond not make itself an issue at any point prior to you getting married? Like,
Incident, by the way, just so it's not all bad news for Alex's mom, I did see on Wikipedia she set the record as the oldest woman ever herself to climb El Cap, I assume with ropes, I hope.
Well, bully her, I suppose. But either way, it's not like Alex just woke up one day and decided to be emotionally unavailable or crass. It's like he is struggling against a lifetime of both nurture and nature here. So, slow progress probably is what we should expect, if anything. But I think it is worth rolling some clips of these scenes between Alex and Sani here, because we can describe them, but we can't convey just how awkward this can get at times. So we'll roll a medley of clips here.
Don't you want some water, bro?
Good thing you have a personal slave to do that for you.
Uh-huh. I know. I'm pretty stoked about that.
All right, is it going to be that no matter how I do this, you're like, why did you do it that way?
I just want watermelon. I kind of wanted to blame Sani to some extent, because you're just like, whatever. I haven't been injured in like 7 years, and then it's like I'm hanging out with this girl that doesn't climb, and I suddenly start getting injured all the time.
Alex was a huge jerk. Fault? Watching me struggle with the tape measure. Alex is like standing by, commenting on how stupid I look, but not actually offering to help or to be productive or kind in any way. You're asking about our domestic bliss. It's non-existent.
I tell Alex I love him all the time, and he shows me that he loves me all the time.
And really just does.
But I also tell him that I also need words of affection. Yeah. We work on that.
In terms of learning how to communicate emotion, Alex has a long way to go. I said, sometimes I'm going to tell you how I feel, and I just need you to say, it totally makes sense that you feel that way. He was like, yeah, I can understand why you feel that way. I was like, I don't really think that you do, but I'm glad that you're trying.
Alex, we have excellent team skills.
Well, I feel like we're not quite killing it, but we're doing really? Well.
I think we're doing great.
So there's a lot to digest in all of that, and even towards the end where it seems like their relationship is on a firmer footing, in the interviews that they did to promote Free Solo, on the morning news shows and so on, when they're interviewed together, there are still these barbs, these comments which you can tell she is visibly uncomfortable. And there was one particular case where they did the sit down with the two of them, and then also Jimmy Chin and Elizabeth Chai, the directors, who again a couple in their own right, and Elizabeth became a mentor of sorts to Sani during the process, which is ironic now that she's become a life coach in herself and is the one dispensing that advice. But Alex would be like jumping in to correct not only Sani, but also Jimmy and Elizabeth about what they said about their relationship and how they tried to portray it and so on. And it was just very uncomfortable to watch. And you get the sense now that Sani has committed to this for the rest of her life. Like they are married now. That is the idea here. And if she hopes to change him, I don't know how fruitful that can ever really be. I think she, at this point, has to know and should know what she signed up for. And if she can make peace with that, that's fine. But it feels like who Alex is and what his priorities are just go against everything that she publicly stated over the course of this documentary.
Yeah, I want to say very happy for them, but I was somewhat surprised when I looked it up and saw that they actually did end up getting married, but it seems like it's going well and I don't want to be that guy at all, but I do wonder if Alex is the kind of guy, or if anyone who is free soloing these enormous mountains are the kinds of people who are ever really going to be satisfied. Like, maybe it is the case, and I certainly hope it is the case, that he is able to say to himself, I've done what I set out to accomplish, and that satisfies me, and no one else has ever, as far as I know, maybe other people have attempted it, but I believe no one else has done it, and I wouldn't be surprised if no one else has even attempted it, and I would very much wish that for Alex, that alone is the validation that he has been searching for up to that point. However, there was some quote, and I wish I had written the exact words down, but he said something somewhere along the way in there about how he essentially wants to keep pushing and pushing, and if you keep pushing for the edge, eventually you're going to find the edge. I am nervous that Alex is not satisfied that he has found the edge yet.
Yeah, and I think that if he is prevented from trying to find the edge, then that will become a source of resentment, and that's going to be, you know, the big factor in their relationship. If Sani gets what she wants, if Alex stops free soloing, then she has won the battle, but has she really won the war? Because I don't know if Alex can ever really be fully domesticated in that way.
Yeah, but at least as far as I can tell, and again, I've done virtually no research on this issue, so take that into consideration here, but I do believe that the quote someone gave along the way about how in not just sports, but in most endeavors, a lot of progress is made and it's very difficult to slow it down, but it is made fairly gradually, but every so often one person comes along and just kind of smashes everything wide open. And it seems to me, although again, from a totally uninformed perspective beyond some very rudimentary Google searches, that Alex may be, and sorry if this is another bad parallel here, I'm not a basketball historian, but it seems to me like he may be like a Wilt Chamberlain figure, where like everyone kind of thought they knew what the game was for a couple of decades or so, and then this one guy came along and everyone recognized, oh hey, he's doing a completely different thing than any of us even thought was on the table to this point. I do wonder if being and hope that being that kind of difference maker could hopefully be enough for Alex there. And even if it's not, it does seem like he is, if not at that kind of status within the evolution of rock climbing, very near it. I do further hope, by the way, Dom, and meant to say this when we were talking about like the future of films being made along these lines, I do have some kind of hope that rock climbing in particular may counterintuitively be one of the last places that people now want to go to push these kind of boundaries, just because it seems virtually impossible, as far as I am aware, to top what Alex did. And I would imagine the next kind of, as far as an average person would be concerned, kind of psycho kids that come along that want to just see how far they can push it until they find the edge, may be compelled to go in a different direction now that rock climbing is kind of spoken for.
Well, they could take another direction in rock climbing. So I think Alex has put the free solo question to bed for now. But there are still many more climbs of the type that, for example, Tommy Caldwell specializes in, where there are new frontiers to be conquered. And those include these frontiers which don't have a clear parallel in free soloing. So there are climbs which you can do, which it's physically impossible to free solo those. Like you need support of some kind, but with those parameters in place, you can do things which are equally impressive given all of that. So I think there are still going to be people who aspire to be the next Alex Honnold, but what that means changes as the nature of the challenge changes. What I do want of Alex is, let's say we get to, Alex is in his 50s, in his 60s, his rock climbing days are behind him. Is he going to be okay with a new, the next Wilt Chamberlain, a new generation of pioneers in the sport outdoing him, going further than he did, if that's even possible at this point? And he'll always be the first to have free soloed LCAP, maybe the only person to have ever soloed LCAP. But if there is some new thing that knocks that off its podium, how will he react to that? Like, is that going to be some kind of existential crisis for him, or will he be content with, having been there at the time that he was, being the person that he was right then, and setting the stage for the people who came after him?
I suspect it will be that door number two idea. I think he recognizes that things in the world of extreme sports are not necessarily on the table for people in their 50s and 60s that are on the table for people who are younger than that. And I don't think he necessarily holds himself to that kind of standard, that for as long as he's alive, he's got to have done the most extreme kind of rock climbing related stunt. He gives some kind of confessional near the end, talking about how, maybe someone's going to see this and decide that watching someone free solo El Cap is going to motivate them to go do whatever the next thing beyond that would be. And he can't even really come up with an idea for what it might be. But I got the sense, at least, that if that day does come along, he will, rather than be livid that someone has bested him, be happy that more progress has been made.
Yeah, it is fun to imagine this cranky old Alex Honnold riding around in some futuristic van with all the bells and whistles for his next challenge with a long-suffering Sani in tow. But I think in some ways it will be a victory if he can move on and the next challenger he applies himself to is, fatherhood or being this role model, this public figure. Like, maybe he will take the same drive and ambition and channel that into a new endeavor, but I hope he can, because otherwise, the nature of any athletic activity, but especially this kind of extreme athletics, is at some point your best days will be behind you and you have to find something new. And this isn't the kind of thing where, all right, I've played pro hockey for 15 years, now I'm going to be a hockey coach. Like, there isn't quite the same seamless transition there. Alex will have to find a new role for himself. You obviously wish him the best in finding that. I know it would have sounded like I'm hypercritical of him over the course of this episode. I wish him the best in finding whatever that new role is. And maybe it's not going to be the same kind of high publicity thing where he's still going to be on magazine covers in 20-25 years, but that's okay. You don't need to be all the time. That can be one chapter of your life, and then you can move on to other things and maybe even bigger and better things by some standards.
I mean, I would imagine that if the world is ever at the point where we can all gather in auditoriums again, he will never run out of speaking engagement opportunities. I don't think he's going to be struggling for a new direction in life. I think the question is, will it keep him entertained is the wrong word, and happy is the wrong word. Fulfilled, I guess, is the closest I can come, Dom. And that I don't know about. Hopefully he can get the same kind of satisfaction out of telling his story that he got out of actually doing it in the first place. But I am optimistic that at least El Cap is behind him, and it does seem like, at least for these last couple of years, he's been willing to set the death-defying stunts aside and focus more on using his newfound publicity for a good cause, which is definitely what you like to see, especially when it means that his life is not going to be in jeopardy nearly as often. Like, I listened again to that interview that he did, and they asked him, would you do it again? Like, if someone went and free soloed El Cap and did it faster than you, would you go try to break the time record? And he said, no, the only way he would do it again is if he got some obscene amount of money donated to his charity. He said he would let someone watch from like a telescope if they were interested in doing so, but that was it.
Yeah. So it's, as we predicted, we haven't talked that much about the climax of the movie yet, the actual scaling of El Cap itself.
The climax? All right. I had to earn the pun paycheck somewhere.
I don't know, you really nailed that one, let me tell you. So let's get into that. And Alex decides that he's going to do this, decides not to tell Sani, and this is another bone of contention between the two of them. And she has to kind of read it from him, suss it out, the fact that he's decided, you know, he now knows when he's going to attempt this, and she is not going to be given the heads up, which in a way I think he sees as a kindness of sorts, where like, if she knows the date, she will be fretting and trying to talk him out of it, and just a mental wreck up to, you know, until and including the day of, whereas at least this way he spares her some of the preamble to all of that.
I think it's also, sorry, but I think it's worth noting that his mom literally comments at some point, I'm always just grateful that he doesn't tell me until after it's over.
Yeah, and I think for her that system works. I think Sani feels the opposite, even though having the date in mind and knowing when it's going to happen will only lead to her being distressed as well.
Sani is wrong about this. Sani does not want to know, as far as I am concerned.
Yes. So as it turns out, Sani is going to remove herself from the location and just go and be with her friends and do her best, insofar as it's possible, to take her mind off the whole thing and just await the phone call that will tell her one way or another if her boyfriend has just completed this incredible accomplishment, or if she's never going to see him again. And those really are the two outcomes in play here for the most part. And so Alex steals himself in his first attempt, has to bail on that near the very beginning. I don't know if it's a form of stage fright or if it's exactly what's going on, but you've put here, and I think I agree, that this is in a way a reassuring sign that he's not going to silence that voice in his head telling him that this isn't the right moment, if, you know, his spidey senses have alerted him to that. You know, he is able to walk away for the time being if that's what he thinks is right.
Oh yeah. And I actually wrote that note down prior to hearing Jimmy Chin in one of his confessionals echo a pretty similar sentiment, which was, it was actually kind of a relief that, even though, you know, we'd all woken up crazy early and we're all set up with our cameras and waiting for him to scale the mountain, that is a zero in terms of a cost to pay compared to having him do this if he feels anything other than completely optimal about the circumstances. And I definitely agree with that. I think the fact that he was totally fine with saying, you know what, I made it 15% of the way up and I'm just not feeling it, I'm not going to go for it today, I think is one of the better possible signs if you are Jimmy and the crew out there for the next time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so Alex gives himself back, and this time this is a real thing, and this is where now any of the production staff, any the two directors, they know now this is it. This is make or break for this entire project. And for Alex, this is where, you know, he lives in the way that he wants to, or he dies. And this is the stakes are hitting him in the face now.
Yes. And there's actually shockingly little kind of drama about whether or not he's going to make it outside of there's one stage called, it's like the slabs or something, and then the aforementioned boulder problem are the two big hangups for him. But once he gets through the boulder problem, he's visibly very happy with himself. He turns and is like mugging for the camera at certain points and like giving thumbs ups. And he did say in interviews that the top is much easier than pretty much the rest of El Cap, and he was feeling extremely good once he got through the boulder there, and then just the sheer jubilation on every crew member's face once the sweat was over. It truly seemed like every single one of them was far more affected by this experience than Alex himself was, who, as you said, Dom, just kept repeating that he was so delighted, like, honestly, like a politician who had been fed one line to just memorize and say over and over.
Yeah, in that moment, you wish for Alex that he had that same emotional register as all the people waiting for him on the ground, right? Or Sani, who just biting her nails, I'm sure, awaiting that phone call. Like, if anything, he's the one who is most limited and trapped in that moment. And it's almost tragic at what should be his ultimate point of triumph.
Yes. But he ends up making it, Dom. So good news for him, of course, to say the least. Good news for Sani. Good news for all the documentary crew members. And this is going to go on, as mentioned, to end up winning Best Documentary at the, I guess it was the 2019 Oscars, celebrating the films made in 2018. And that is pretty cool, I think. This is, at least for me, and I'm sure we will have more just kind of general wrap-up stuff, but once we hit the conclusion and he makes it to the top of the mountain is when it really sunk in for me that, like, I'm not sure if I'll ever see anything like this ever again, even video of it.
Yeah, and not just for Alex himself and for everyone who was there on production, waiting nervously for an outcome one way or the other, but also just for everyone in watching. I think they're, especially people who were lucky enough to watch this for the first time, like with that real cinematic experience. I saw some people say they watched this on IMAX, and frankly, for this part of the documentary, that seems like the only real appropriate way to watch it, right? Just like really immersing yourself in the moment. But it is so hard to get that kind of authentic experience again. And there will be new stuff always coming along that shocks you and surprises you and will enter the same kind of tier as this, but you can never predict that in advance. And so whenever a new thing like that comes along, you really have to savor it for all you can.
I really do wonder how the people who knew Alex growing up, not like just kids he went to high school with or whatever, but just pretty much anyone who has presumably heard about how this has gone for him, like people who are much older than him as well, is kind of what I'm getting at. I would imagine having like any kind of personal relationship with someone who goes on to do something like this may alter people's perspectives.
How do you mean?
I feel like going from knowing random high schooler or early 20-something Alex Honnold, who it seemed at the time, in your mind, you being the average person who knew him, was doing well in climbing, but you know, what's that really in the grand scheme of things? And it's great that he has this kind of passion, but it may be bordering on unhealthy at certain times, and certainly a bit more of a risk than I would ever personally be taking here if I'm someone who knows this guy. And then to see that person go on to do this genuinely like superhuman to accomplish this kind of superhuman feat and have this renown all across at least the movie viewing part of the world, I feel like would make me have some second guesses about what I thought I knew about Alex specifically and the Alexes of the world along the way.
Yeah, I think in Alex's case, and this is tied into what we said earlier about this feels inevitable in a way, because for this to happen, if it is going to happen, it will take someone like Alex. I don't think there is anyone who knew Alex while he was growing up who didn't know him as a climber when they themselves were a climber, if that makes sense. Like, his social circle was so circumscribed by that, and he was such a recluse, and this was his single-minded passion for so long, that there was no one kind of on the periphery of his life who would be able to have that detached perspective on things. You either didn't know Alex even existed, or you were a climber and you knew Alex, and therefore you knew he was destined for great things, and maybe not this scale of great things, but you knew that this was his focus, and you presumably had a good sense of his talent, and so you can't have been too shocked by this, even though the thing itself is, of course, shocking on some level.
I don't mean to... I'm definitely explaining this wrong, I guess is what I'm getting at, but I feel like what Alex ended up doing just feels so outside the realm of human capability that if I knew him before he did that, I feel like that would mess with my head.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I think that anyone, if you know anyone who has gone on to stardom in some capacity, then I think that thought always crosses your mind. Like, I always wonder, you know, like reading up on biographies of presidents or presidential candidates or people who like are these big public figures. There's someone who knew them as just that guy in high school, right? And so for them, having to update that Rolodex of, that guy maybe seemed a bit weird, or yeah, they were cool or whatever, and now they are like one of the most powerful people in the world. Like, that, I don't know how you stitch those two parts of that image together.
I mean, you have pretty meaningful equity that several people you went to Oxford with will be major politicians in England.
Yeah, well, my university roommate was on the Forbes 30 Under 30, and if nothing else to that point had really made me feel bad about achieving nothing at all while I was at Oxford, that sure drove it home.
Well, at least you have a sweet podcast, Dom.
Do I, though?
Yeah, do I? fair. So, any other things we skipped over that you wanted to get to?
Not for me. I think we covered a lot of ground here, and in some sense, maybe this is the one example we can find of a metaphor, Colin, where this isn't just about Alex. This isn't just about him climbing El Capitan. It's about what it takes to excel in an area of human achievement. It's a parable about successful relationships and how to grow as an individual. There's a lot here that goes beyond just a guy who's a little awkward climbed a cliff, because I think that would be a really reductive way of framing this, even though that by itself, the way that they put it together, makes for truly incredible viewing.
So tell me then, scale of 1 to 10, gotta figure, all right, the scale is 1 to 10 breakfasts eaten directly out of the pan, how would you rank Free Solo?
And this is a solid, I would say 8.5 spatulas.
Yes. I am going to go, I'm going to give it a clean 9. I think this is, okay, this is really going to be a movie that sticks with me.
I don't hate that. And I every time that I've seen it, which is, you know, several times now, I always walk away happy and would not mind seeing it again. So yeah, maybe I'll upgrade it to a full 9. I'll get that final half of a spatula in there too.
Okay, well, Free Solo, welcome to the Golden Spatula Club. Dom, I think that is going to do it for me. Anything you feel would be pertinent to add on at the end here before we get out of here?
I would say if you enjoyed Free Solo, go and watch Meru, which is another climbing documentary by the same team of directors. Jimmy Chin was really heavily involved in that too.
Can I get a spelling on that again?
M-E-R-U. So that one is pretty phonetic, even with my delivery of it. And then the Dawn Wall, my friend, I would recommend checking that one out as well. Very different vibe, but still kind of in the same orbit, and I found that one really fun. And then there's another one which the name escapes me now, which is a lot more about the history of extreme climbing, if you want to delve more into like the factual background of it all. I really enjoyed going deep down this rabbit hole, and I get the sense you did as well.
I absolutely did. So let's do it again sometime soon. I am always a big fan of these documentary podcasts, and we could definitely use some more main feed content. Right now, we have over on the Patreon feed for the Survivor folk out there, we are rewatching Survivor Cagayan, our first endeavor going episode by episode through a season that we actually were around to cover in real time. So if you are jonesing for the Survivor fix, patreon.com/Dom and Colin is where that is happening. But I think that is going to wrap us up here today. So thank you guys who have made it to this point. We will talk to you hopefully very soon. Take care, everybody.